Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. U.S. trade policies have become a major part of this year's presidential debates and stump speeches. Most of the debate on trade deals revolves around NAFTA and the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. NAFTA, which was signed by President Bill Clinton, went into effect on January 1, 1994. The agreement created a trilateral trade policy between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Well, two decades later, President Obama is pushing for the TPP, a massive trade deal among the United States and 11 countries, including Chile, Japan, New Zealand, Peru, and Vietnam. According to Public Citizen, the TPP would make it easier for big corporations to ship even more jobs overseas. This week, NPR and some member stations across the country are taking part in an election year series called A Nation Engaged by talking about key issues on the campaign trail. And this week, the series focuses on trade and jobs. So today, we are going to look at how these mega trade deals affect California's economy, its labor force, and environmental protection laws. Between 1994 and 2015, California lost over 417,000 manufacturing jobs to NAFTA and the WTO. And this is according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But it's incredibly hard to get specific information about how trade deals have affected California specifically. Today, we are talking about this with two guests. Xiomara Castro is the Northern California Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, a national coalition of environmental, labor, consumer, family farm, religious, and other civil society groups. CTC was founded in 1992 to improve NAFTA, and Xiomara Castro joins us from Berkeley. Hi, Xiomara. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Harley Shaken, Director of the Center for Latin American Studies and Professor in the Department of Geography and the Graduate School of Education at UC Berkeley. Harley Shaken has written extensively about NAFTA, and he joins us also from Berkeley. Hi, Harley. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again.
It's very nice to have you. So, Harley, it's hard to evaluate specifically the impact of trade on any given state, including California. Why was it so hard for us to find specific articles about this issue?
Well, in part because California is so connected to the rest of the United States that things produced here might go to Texas and then be exported to Mexico, or things coming into California may stay here only long enough to cross the border and be assembled in Mexico. So it gets rather confusing if you try to precisely estimate say the job impacts in one state alone. For the national economy, you can get a sharper picture because we are a highly integrated national economy, and with free trade agreements, we become much more integrated with other countries.
So if we want to assess how trade policies have affected California's economy, its labor force, and its environment, how do we go about doing it?
Well, I think there are two ways. One way is with some pretty sophisticated economic models that project what the employment impact would be. The problem with these models is they are sophisticated technically, but are based on very questionable, often unrealistic assumptions. For example, many of the models assume full employment, so if you assume full employment, it's hard to show unemployment coming out of a trade deal. It's a bit like computerized astrology. Sophisticated methods, assumptions that are a bit questionable. The second way, we can take a look at the NAFTA experience over more than two decades and ask, what happened here? Why is that important in terms of TPP? Well, it's often been said that TPP encompasses 40% of the global economy. That is, these 12 countries, their economic output is 40% of the world. Well, 73% of that is just the three NAFTA countries, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So what happened with NAFTA is a good indicator of what's likely to happen going forward. And that hasn't been a real good experience, I think, for working Californians.
And we'll talk about that throughout the show. Xiomara, what would you add to that? What is the best way to explain how trade policies have affected a state like California without losing people and making the information palatable?
Well, I think some of the statistics, just like the previous speaker was saying, are pretty, pretty impressive. And so when we hear how people have been affected by NAFTA, and then if we talk about the WTO on top of that, we can feel the effects of that. And I think if we're, when I go out and talk to people about the TPP and what the TPP could mean, if it were passed, I do speak a lot about what we have experienced from NAFTA, and I think that's the best way to go about it.
Okay, what have we experienced from NAFTA, and what does that tell us about what we might experience with the TPP? And the Public Citizen, for example, Harley, calls the TPP NAFTA on steroids.
Yeah, absolutely. There are so many things about the TPP. It's hard. It is, overwhelming at times. We've already talked a bit about how many more jobs will be shipped overseas. One of the things is it will definitely continue to lower our wages. So, one of the things is the TPP would push down our wages by throwing Americans into competition with Vietnamese workers. Now, Vietnamese workers make about 65 cents an hour. And we've already seen, you talked about the jobs lost in California, enough job losses, enough plants going overseas, and communities that have literally been hollowed out from this, leaving of manufacturing from their places. If the TPP were to go through, again, putting on top of that the competition from the Vietnamese workers, it's just not going to be, a good thing for California. Another thing is food safety. The TPP would flood our country with unsafe imported foods. We saw a lot of that coming, in through NAFTA. The TPP would now, encircle countries in the Asia-Pacific Rim where we get a lot of seafood. It's already very difficult for us to inspect any of the seafood that comes into the country, and this would make it even harder, and we would get even more imports coming in from that area. Another impact we can talk about, more expensive medicines. So the TPP would raise our medicine prices because it gives big pharmaceutical corporations new monopoly rights to keep lower-cost generics and drugs off of the market even more. One of the things we can talk about is how these trade agreements are constructed and how they're built, right? There's over 600 corporate advisors that went into writing and making this thing happen. And partly it's because of the benefits that they get out of it. And it really is just a corporate benefits kind of trade deal. Big pharmaceutical companies, what they wanted was an even larger, patent right. So the patents on their drugs that they are making are going to be extended. It's going to drastically affect how we get our medicines, and it's going to be an even further impact for developing countries who need life-saving medicines like AIDS drugs, malaria medicine, and it'll be harder for them to get those generics.
According to Public Citizen, in early November 2015, after 7 years of closed-door negotiations, the final TPP text was released, and Public Citizen says that it's worse than we thought. So, Harley, we heard from Siomara about the concerns. You hear from Public Citizen, like she said, that the TPP will empower corporations to attack environmental and health safeguards. But then you hear from President Obama that the TPP would improve the NAFTA agreement. President Obama says the Asia deal is an improvement over NAFTA because the labor and environmental provisions are part of the treaty and are enforceable. So we're getting completely opposite information. What are your thoughts on what President Obama has said about the TPP?
Well, what he has said is actually true. The labor language is better in TPP, and it is part of the main agreement. But I would argue that will prove wholly inadequate. It isn't a question of language. It is a question of implementation, and that's where NAFTA has fallen dramatically short. The language was weaker, but even with the strongest language, absent real meaningful reform as the price of admission into the trade agreement, you've got a problem. In a very real way, labor conditions under NAFTA in the export sector in Mexico over the last two decades have measurably deteriorated. Today, Mexico has the investment protections of Ohio, and in many areas, the labor conditions, say, of Honduras, which isn't very good whatsoever. But overwhelmingly, in key industries under NAFTA, the products that are produced in Mexico are not sold in the Mexican market. They're exported to the U.S. market. So in a way, trade can provide some real benefits, and expanded trade could benefit all the countries of TPP. But absent a real addressing of these core issues, that potential is absolutely squandered. So we've seen productivity in manufacturing in Mexico over the last two decades rise by 80%. That means the average Mexican worker in this sector has produced 80% more. And that same worker is earning 20% less over these two decades. That's not a recipe for a healthy economy. It's not a recipe for moving into the middle class, and it exerts a strong downward pressure on wages and conditions in U.S. firms. So the issue, in my view, is not new jobs and new industries in Mexico. I think that's highly desirable if it's done in a sustainable way. The issue is the rules of the game and who wins and who loses. And in a very real way, this is a trade agreement that's highly unbalanced. And while President Obama has chosen to champion it, the Democrats in the House of Representatives are overwhelmingly against it. Probably about 85 to 90% would vote against the TPP today. And I think that gives you an indication of very strong feelings in many congressional districts across the country about how this trade agreement is likely to play out.
Harley Shakin is director of the Center for Latin American Studies and professor in the Department of Geography and the Graduate School of Education at UC Berkeley. He writes extensively about NAFTA. And Xiomara Castro is the Northern California director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, a national group that was founded in 92 to improve NAFTA. Today, we are talking about U.S. trade policies and how they have affected California. And if you have any questions or comments, if you have been directly affected, if your industry has been directly affected by trade policies in California, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Trade policies have become a huge part of this year's presidential debate. And this week, NPR and member stations across the country are taking part in an election series called A Nation Engaged. And this week, the focus is on trade and jobs. Harley, so let's talk about NAFTA and how it affected California, because as you both said, we can look at NAFTA to learn about, well, how it affected California and then what's to come with the TPP. So what industries were most affected by NAFTA, Harley?
Well, it has affected many industries, including some important industries in California, and it has affected communities well beyond the specific industries involved. For example, one of the most successful automobile factories in the United States was the NUMMI plant in Fremont, California. That was a partnership of General Motors and Toyota. That plant was closed early in this century, around 2004, as I recall, maybe a little later than that, and that put out of work about 5,000 people who worked at the factory and another 25,000 in the surrounding communities with suppliers and people whose livelihood depended on these workers. That's a very large loss. Where are those Toyota Corollas that used to be made in Fremont, California, now being made in a brand new plant that's being built under NAFTA in Mexico? Why? Because the wages are a sixth or even lower of what they are although they were in Fremont. Now, the Fremont plant was profitable and highly successful. Economists have often said, well, where wages are low, that's unfortunate, but it means productivity is low. But in Mexican auto factories, productivity is comparable to the U.S. or Japan or Germany, for that matter. Very high quality, and wages that are depressed because of a lack of labor rights in Mexico and because of government policy that wants to keep wages low to attract investment. That's not a recipe for overall economic success. Of course those jobs would be welcomed in Mexico, but they could be high-wage jobs with profitable companies that would create a domestic market in Mexico. As it is in this industry, auto, 80% of the output of the Mexican auto industry is exported. Now one might say, well, wait a minute. That Fremont plant is now a Tesla plant. It is. That's an important gain, but that's far fewer jobs right now. And had California had both these factories, it would have created a cluster of advanced manufacturing in Northern California. So these were very measurable losses, and it goes well beyond that in manufacturing areas like Los Angeles, which is one of the largest in the country. That will be very vulnerable to the entry of countries such as Vietnam, where the labor standards are virtually non-existent today. Now, the language and implementation for Vietnam is more specific, but it is highly unlikely that much of this is actually going to be implemented. How do we know? Because the reaction of investors to that language was just to yawn. They weren't particularly alarmed by it. And in the context of Mexico, one of the great promises of the TPP early on by its proponents was it will improve the NAFTA labor conditions, which are widely acknowledged to be inferior and in many cases deteriorating. The reality of this has been just the opposite. Last week, the Mexican Minister of Commerce said, look, we're not making any changes in our labor laws regarding the new TPP. They are going to remain as is. That is locking in a status quo that's highly undesirable, but it doesn't simply affect Tijuana. It affects Stockton or Long Beach or cities throughout California, because the danger is that jobs are exported and labor standards are imported absent a real effort to harmonize in an upward direction. In other words, what I'm saying is you can have a trade agreement in which people benefit. You can have expanded trade that gives us all desirable things, but to do that, you have to ensure that standards in the labor, environmental, and other areas harmonize in an upward direction.
And Harley, the closure of the NUMMI plant in Fremont got national news coverage. Has anyone tracked those workers to find out where they went after that plant closed?
Yes. There have been a number of studies. I haven't seen the most recent ones, but they painted a dismal picture. Very few workers were reemployed at anything like the wages that they were earning and benefits that they were earning while they were NUMMI workers, unionized workers in that plant. And I would repeat, that was a highly successful plant that made money for Toyota and for General Motors. This wasn't a function of a plant that couldn't cut it. This was a plant that showed it could be done. And the Germans show every day that at wages significantly higher than the U.S., you can have very profitable manufacturing.
Ciamara, what would you add to that when we're talking about which industries were hit hardest by NAFTA? What stands out for you?
Definitely. Well, I wanted to actually add that in terms of, I think, Harley mentioned a bit about, you know, how communities get impacted beyond the industries. So I just wanted to add a little bit to, you know, Mexico for California. Of course, Mexico is our southern neighbor right there. And, you know, we are definitely have a really close relationship in terms of economy, but also people. And so one of the things is, you know, when NAFTA came through, it drastically changed the economy in Mexico. It really converted Mexico from being like an agriculturally based, you know, society, agriculturally based country, where most people, you know, worked the land or they were subsistence farmers. And because of the increase of manufacturing on the northern borders, you know, a lot of people left their agricultural land, and of course their land was also being opened up through NAFTA. There was a, you know, part of NAFTA that changed actually the Mexican Constitution to open up their land for sale. A lot of communal land that used to be owned, you know, within communities. So, you know, the loss of land, the displacement from their communities up into these factories that Harley was painting a picture of, which, you know, most people can't handle that kind of work for very long. You know, it's very degrading. It's, you know, very hard physically. I've been to a lot of those factories on the southern border, on the northern Mexican border, our southern border. And so what do people do? They, you know, look for a better life. They look for a way to you know, support their families, to gain better income, and that has really impacted us in terms of immigration as well. And so people, you know, have all of this displacement that is caused by trade agreements. We have, you know, specifically seen that, you know, coming into California. And those jobs, even though, you know, there were more jobs going into Mexico, it couldn't hold the amount of people who needed work, who needed to, you know, were coming up and making that migration north.
And Xiomara, to that point, there was a documentary many years ago that looked at what happened when these factories basically jumped the border. And a lot of women in Mexico got these jobs, but they didn't pay them enough to support their families. And so they really had no choice but to migrate to California to find higher paying jobs. Yeah. So these connections really go deep. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I have visited, you know, factories on the border, you know, you hear the stories of what workers go through in these factories and how much they're willing to take. They can only take so much. And you know, a lot of people have tried to organize unions, and there's just been massive, you know, pushback on them from organizing these unions from the bosses. You know, not a lot of support from local governments and that kind of thing, and so people can only take so much, and so it does really, you know, affect people coming up north and searching for better jobs here and better opportunities here in California. And one of the other things I just wanted to mention too, in terms of NAFTA with the environment, you know, one of the things actually that we're seeing right now play out is that NAFTA also included the investor-state settlement disputes that the TPP has. So these are, you know, ways that the corporations can actually sue governments over loss of profit or perceived loss of profit over projects that may not go through because of health or environmental policies that would shut down this kind of production or that kind of thing. And so with NAFTA, we had this, and as many of your listeners might know about the Keystone XL pipeline, right, that was something that, you know, was going to come through, starting in Canada all the way through to, you know, the United States down to our down to the Gulf. And there was 5 years of organizing happening around it, many indigenous leaders, ranchers, people bringing this issue to our government about how it would impact us. As a country, you know, where we were going in terms of investing more in fossil fuels instead of clean energy. And so the Obama administration actually listened, right? They said, yes, we're not going to go through with this thing. You know, Obama said I'm vetoing the Keystone XL pipeline. Well, under NAFTA rules, TransCanada wants the U.S. government to hand more than $15 billion of our tax dollars to the corporation as compensation for the Keystone XL decision. And so these are the kinds of things that we're going to see more of if the TPP were to go through.
That is Xiomara Castro, Northern California Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. We're also joined by Harley Shaken, Director of the Center for Latin American Studies at UC Berkeley. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about how trade policies have affected California and what we can expect if the TPP does go through. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your Call on Local Public Radio, a program that relies on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK, toll-free 866-798-8255, or you can send your question or comment via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC, and following that at noon today, Philosophy Talk.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with immigrant comedians about using humor to champion immigrant rights. Presidential candidates are scapegoating immigrants in the race to the top, and a Washington Post ABC News poll found that half of Republican voters support deporting all undocumented immigrants. So faced with increased racism, immigrant comedians are hosting a fundraiser next week for the International Institute of the Bay Area. That's an organization that helps Bay Area immigrants. We'll speak with some comedians on tomorrow's show, and then on Thursday, we'll speak with Monique Morris about her new book, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about how trade policies have affected California and what's to come if the TPP is implemented. This week, NPR and member stations across the country are taking part in a Nation Engaged, an election year series. And this week, the series focuses on trade and jobs. So be sure to tune in for some of these stories. We're joined today by Xiomara Castro, Northern California Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. They were founded in 92 to improve NAFTA. Harley Shaken is Director of the Center for Latin American Studies and a professor at UC Berkeley. And you can join us at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Philippe in New Mexico. Hi, Philippe. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rose. My question has to do with your last guest sort of just touched on it, and that is, I think that when for obvious reasons, when we talk about the trade deals, we focus on factories going abroad. But one of the most deleterious aspects of these trade deals, it seems to me, is we force these smaller countries to open up their agricultural sectors, and the big winners are the large U.S. corporate farming corporations, and the big losers are all these small indigenous farmers in Mexico and Africa and various other places. And on top of this, there's a political irony, which is that for the neoliberals like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who are Democrats, notwithstanding being neoliberals, to push these trade deals is almost countersensical, because the states that benefit from increased exports of agricultural products, I know California exports a lot, but the big winners are the red states like Kansas, Nebraska, the High Plains states. And it's just, I shake my head when I look at Obama pushing through the TPP, or for that matter Bill Clinton pushing through NAFTA, because as I said, the big winners on the one hand are the owners of the factories that get sent overseas, so that's capital, and on the other hand the big winners are farmers in red states. And why how the Democratic Party hoodwinked itself into this corner I'm incredulous.
Hmm. Well, thank you. It's a really important question, Philippe. And Harley, first of all, why don't you tell us how trade deals have affected California's massive agriculture sector?
Well, trade deals have affected all of California's economy, including the critical agricultural sector. Now, one of the things in agriculture is we do benefit from trade exports, and we can benefit from imports. But where you're dealing with highly unequal economies, you have two choices when you sign a trade deal. You can put in place language that is going to harmonize conditions upwards, or you can put in place language that is going to pull down the better conditions to the lowest possible level. The problem with TPP and NAFTA before it, in my view, is it takes that latter path, pressing down. So, for example, you just had a strike a number of months ago in Baja California that mobilized upwards of 40,000 agricultural workers, and they were surprisingly successful in getting a bit of attention and in winning some key demands. That was short-lived. Agreements were signed and then completely disregarded. If you have extremely low wages in the agricultural sector in Mexico, that begins to put pressure on similar products when they're grown in the Central Valley, as well as the same phenomena taking place in other sectors of the economy. And as you pointed out, we're in the midst of an election year, and trade has become a very hot-button issue. Both Democratic candidates are against the TPP in its present form, and Donald Trump takes a very different tack, but has tapped into a deep anger by people in communities that have been affected. And it isn't simply workers in a given sector, it is entire communities. For example, if you're a nurse in Bakersfield, if you're a school teacher in Long Beach, the ways in which some of these negative effects work through the economy is going to affect you, even though you may not work in one of those specific sectors. We've seen that so dramatically in the Midwest, Flint, Michigan. With the crisis over lead poisoning in the water, which has been horrific and has its own issues and dynamic, we sometimes forget that in the late 1990s, Flint employed 80,000 manufacturing workers. Today, it employs fewer than 10,000. That implosion has been a real foundation for all the horrors we've seen in the last year in Flint. It's not simply trade that's at issue here. There are other factors as well, but there's little question that trade has been an important dynamic and is resonating big time. TPP has not been ratified yet. It's unclear when it will be voted on. It is likely going to be a close vote. It is also unclear if it will be ratified, but in any case, with the pressure of an election affecting all the candidates, a lot of these issues are getting a lot more attention than they might in another year.
And Xiomara, would you comment on Philippe's question about how these trade deals have affected farmers in Mexico? And, you know, for example, millions of farmers have lost significant income and left their corn farms, according to Public Citizen. Some became farm laborers working in squalid conditions for poverty wages on large plantations growing produce. And according to Public Citizen, a lot of these farmers are going back and forth or trying to go back and forth between Mexico and California.
Yeah, absolutely. And partly, again, it's I mentioned before that for NAFTA in Mexico, it actually changed the constitution, right? So a lot of this land that was held communally, that was sort of farmed and in low scale, you know, some would call inefficient ways, but just, you know, in order to feed communities, was opened up for large scale, you know, production. And so big agricultural business came down and, you know, was able to, like, buy whole swaths of land. And so, again, just how what you read, that what how that affected farmers was, you know, them not being able to hold on to their land or having to work for those big, you know, agricultural corporations, and then most likely, you know, leaving that agricultural sector and looking for jobs or sustenance elsewhere. It's one of the things that we're seeing, you know, with TPP countries right now, who farmers in those countries are fearful of. You know, they know the experience of NAFTA. They've heard the experience of NAFTA in Mexico. And so specifically in Japan, a lot of rice farmers are very concerned and have been, you know, protesting and doing a lot of action to try and get attention with their government around not ratifying, you know, the TPP. Rice growers in Japan are similar. It's very low scale, very inefficient. It's just community farms, the way that people get their rice there. And what they're really fearful of will be this, you know, large-scale importation of rice coming in, subsidized rice coming in from the United States. You know, it'll be cheaper rice. And for consumers there in Japan, you know, going to that cheaper rice, it's really scary for the farmers there in Japan. And so each of the TPP countries, you know, has a concern in terms of the farmers or the community folks there. You know, we've seen how they have rallied around a certain issue that they feel they will be impacted by. Mm.
Well, thank you for calling in, Philippe. Let's go next to David in Berkeley. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning. I was listening to Merrill, who said that both candidates on the Democratic side don't support it, although the Clinton side changed their message as soon as Bernie's campaigning became very strong and evident that he was popular. Knowing that the politicians abuse the public like a senile patient, the presidential campaigners state they need donations from investment banks such as Goldman and Sachs, $711,000, Citigroup, $782,000, J.P. Morgan, $620,000. These are all large donations to the Clinton side. Merrill Lynch, the corporations are Corning, Skadden Krupps, $406,000. Lehman Brothers was a mere $362,000. The list goes on. It came from the Intercept.com. It's a spreadsheet that an investigator put out from a year ago, not just recently. So these are contributions that started a year ago. So knowing they want to keep this alliance wants to keep it secretive, the corporations and banks that are allied to the TPP, are any of these companies and banks revealed as adherents to the TPP?
Hmm. Thank you, David. Harley, do you want to take that one?
Well, yes. I think part of this is this trade agreement is highly unbalanced, and it's not much of a mystery why it is so unbalanced. It affects 12 countries. That's not the issue. But from the U.S. side, it was negotiated not simply in secrecy, a certain amount of that is necessary in any negotiation, but in an obsessive secrecy. So 1,000 advisors were granted security clearances to help craft the language. 85% of them were corporate CEOs, corporate executives, or lobbyists. Now, if they are having an outsized influence in crafting the language, it's not a great surprise that the language that comes out is highly unbalanced as to who wins and who loses. For the other 15%, there were some labor people, there were some consumer people, and their strong complaint was they were credited, but their advice wasn't really taken in all the critical areas. And what demonstrates why this agreement has such a corporate tilt is the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism that was referred to before. The ISDS, for, you know, your eyes can begin to glaze over, but it's very meaningful because what it does is it allows an investor or a corporation to sue a government directly and not have to go through courts, but have to go to an three-person appointed panel that's largely being drawn from experts, that is, the very people that helped craft the language in the first place. So it's hardly a surprise that social regulations, environmental issues, health questions can all be unwound through these panels, which is really damaging to any democratic society. And to indicate how unbalanced this is, we had a fascinating case where Philip Morris, under the existing U.S.-Australia free trade agreement that had an ISDS panel, sued Australia for health warnings on cigarette packages. Australia was putting out very graphic photos on cigarette packages about the cancer-inducing potential of tobacco. Philip Morris said this was a restraint on their trade, etc. Now, that was such an unbalanced and damaging suit, and tobacco has this negative reputation for well-deserved reasons, that under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the U.S. Trade Representative has said, well, tobacco won't be covered by these panels. Meaning, that's a tacit admission, these panels tend to be highly favorable towards the industry or the area that they're supposed to be regulating. Now, if that's the case, what about all the other areas concerning the environment, health and safety, et cetera, that are going to be left intact? The net result here isn't a loss of jobs directly in any way, necessarily, but rather a loss of democratic rights and input through this mechanism.
And we should also point out, Harley, because it's easy to forget these things, that a lot of politicians didn't even read the TPP. Last year, Elizabeth Warren, senator from Massachusetts, and Rosa DeLauro, congresswoman from Connecticut, both Dems, wrote a piece for the Boston Globe called Who's Writing the TPP? And a lot of politicians said they didn't know what's in it. In this piece, they reveal that of the 566 TPP committee members, 85% are senior corporate executives or representatives from industry lobbying groups.
Yes, and that's very close to, you know, the numbers I mentioned earlier. That I think that's indisputable, really. And as for reading it, you've raised a fascinating question, because this debate is being characterized for free trade versus protectionism. If you're for this agreement, you're for trade, and if you oppose the agreement, you're often referred to as anti-trade. That is highly misleading. In fact, it's directly false. You could write a free trade agreement on several sheets of paper. All you have to do is say, we agree to eliminate all tariffs and to give corporations equal treatment in each of the countries. You might have a bit more than that, but it's straightforward. TPP is 30 dense chapters and 6,000 pages. What else is in it? This isn't a free trade agreement. If you give extensive protections to corporate interests in this magical world, you're called a free trader. And if you raise the notion of how are working families affected, what happens to environmental standards, you're viewed as anti-trade. It's got nothing to do with free trade versus protectionism. That's a 19th century debate. It has everything to do with, in a managed trade agreement today, who benefits and who loses. And there's a broader acknowledgement that there will be a significant number of losers in the United States, even by proponents of TPP. And the argument they raise is, we need a stronger a social safety net, meaning we need more unemployment assistance, retraining assistance, transition funds, etc., all of which is true. But what we need is something more fundamental. We need a trade agreement that minimizes the numbers of losers. This isn't simply the inevitable outcome of trade. This is the outcome of an unbalanced agreement that tends to favor corporations at the expense of communities and working families.
Harley Shaken is director of the Center for Latin American Studies and a professor at UC Berkeley. Xiomara Castro is the Northern California director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, a coalition of environmental, labor, and consumer groups. CTC was founded in 1992 to improve NAFTA, and we're talking today about how trade policies have affected the state of California. And let's hear from Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I would like to ask your guests if they have been aware of companies along the border in the United States, whether they're big farms or smaller enterprises who actually advertise in Mexico, in border towns and others to more or less entice them over the border to work for them for the much lower wages. I did see ads in a documentary a couple of years ago, and I was pretty shocked, and I really never heard any follow-up from anyone. So I'm wondering if they're aware of this.
Okay, thank you, Ruby. Xiomara, are you aware of this?
Yeah, I have. It's been a while since I've been down in that region, but yeah, there are definitely, I have heard of ads, I've seen ads. But and the other thing is they don't really need to advertise, like, a lot of corporations know that they will get a lot of benefits if they're moving down to relocate their factories in those regions. These free trade zones, they basically, they're given free water, they're given free electricity, they're not, paying taxes, and that's on top of the really low wages that they're going to be paying for their workers. So, that kind of situation for corporations sort of speaks for themselves. It's not a lot of advertising is not needed. They know that, that kind of situation exists.
Xiomara, can you name some companies?
Well, sure. A lot of them are electronic companies, the ones that I visited. I didn't visit any car manufacturing, but they're contractors, so they're subcontractors. And so, in this day and age in our global economy, a whole product isn't made in one single place.
Right.
So it's a lot of parts. So it could, a lot of the places I visited were like, electronic parts for televisions, and they just kind of like went to everywhere and to every kind of brand that you can think of, whether it's Sony or, Apple computers or, all kinds of screens and TV screens or parts were made in these factories. So it isn't like really about like one specific brand, but it's a lot about like the parts and the smaller pieces that make up all of these products that we use.
Right, because I was also curious about the electronics and software industries.
Yeah, there's a lot of cell phone parts, a lot of, anything that uses a screen, those kinds of parts are definitely made on the border. And they tend to use a lot of water in these manufacturing plants to clean the parts after they're made or during the process. And these are also, regions that are very delicate in terms of environmental, situations with water in the first place. I mean, these are arid, dry regions, so the water impact is huge.
And Harley, do you have any others to add to that?
No, I think, these are really, really critical questions, and addressing them within the context of a trade agreement is critical. You need effective enforcement, but you also need a demonstrated commitment to reform before the agreement is signed. The fact that there is such widespread consensus of poor labor rights in Mexico over the last two decades under NAFTA, and the refusal of the Mexican government to link the entry into TPP with demonstrated reform versus a possible commitment sometime in the future for reform, I think really indicates both a model for the other TPP countries that's unfortunate, and also the fact that change is not simply going to take place in this new larger agreement. But there's another dimension to this as well. 10 other countries, according to the U.S. Trade Representative, have indicated an interest in joining TPP. Which countries they are weren't mentioned. Many of them will be, I suspect, in Latin America. But China ultimately will join TPP, I suspect. Part of the argument for the agreement has been geopolitical. That is, China will have to join on U.S. terms if they want to partake in this. That's highly unlikely. China will negotiate the terms it wants to get into this, and the net result will be TPP becomes the foundation of global trade, and I think that could have some very damaging impacts for California.
And Xiomara, to bring this back to California, are you working with organizations that plan to organize and take to the streets and raise awareness about how the TPP would affect California? Because we have an email from Chris about the lack of media attention and the lack of labor coverage on these issues.
Yeah, we have been. I mean, I've been working on this issue for, you know, several years now, and we have a coalition of coalitions, if you will. I mean, it's just everybody and anybody who can be affected by this. We have labor unions, environmental groups, citizens groups that are coming together, and our main focus is to get to our congressional representatives.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we will definitely continue to cover this issue. Xiomara Castro is the Northern California Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign, and Harley Shaken is Director of the Center for Latin American Studies and a professor at UC Berkeley. Thank you both for joining us, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll speak with comedians about using humor to champion immigrant rights. Presidential candidates are scapegoating immigrants in their race to the top. A Washington Post poll found that half of Republican voters support deporting all undocumented immigrants. Faced with increased racism, comedians are hosting a fundraiser for the International Institute of the Bay Area, an organization that helps immigrants and their families. How can comedy challenge xenophobia? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.